Hey, good morning. It's good to see you. Happy Canada Day weekend, or as close to a Canada Day weekend as we're going to get. It is good to be here this morning. It is hot and sunny outside. Summer has come, and none of us are going to complain because of the winter that we had. We're just going to love the sunshine and the beautiful weather, even if it's a little bit hot today. And I'm glad that you're here. And I know that there's a number of people who are taking the opportunity this weekend to get away and relax a little bit. And maybe the one drawback that we are all here this morning is that we are not up north somewhere sitting by a lake or at a cottage, just kind of soaking in the sun and being on the water and cooling down in the lake and stuff like that. But before we get too upset about that and get a little too jealous, just one small little consolation of the fact that we are here and we're not up north and we didn't get to go away and all that kind of stuff. Here's our one consolation, other than being here this morning, which is awesome. Traffic. The traffic, right? You ever have an opportunity, you get away, maybe you get up north, you have a nice relaxing weekend, the stress of weeks and months of work and all the daily grind just melt away as you sit and relax and enjoy. And a weekend like today where it's nice and hot and you just feel good and your soul and your body and everything is the way that it should be. And then you get in the car and you start driving home at the same time that everybody else in Ontario gets in their car and drives home. And by the time you get home, all of that stress relief has worn off and you're so tense because you've been sitting on the 400 for hours just inching along in traffic. And we don't have to do that today because we're here. What a blessing from God. So wonderful. You know, traffic, it'll drive you nuts. And one of the big things that every holiday weekend, this time of year and stuff like this, you hear on the news is that at these times of year when there's so many people on the roads and so many people celebrating is that the police are out there more than normal. They are patrolling the roads. There's so many safety issues. And you know, one of the biggest things now that they are always on us about, that they want us to be so diligent about, distracted driving. One of the worst problems for getting in accidents that we have going on right now. And you know this because it drives you nuts. You're driving along, maybe you're going at a good clip, you're cruising along, things are going well, and then all of a sudden the guy who is in one lane over, who's texting on his phone and fiddling with his radio, decides that he is now going to merge lanes right in front of you, doesn't see you, and so you slam on the brakes and it's everything within you to not say the four-letter word that you feel like saying, but instead to lay on the horn and to cry out something like, watch where you're going. You're going to kill somebody. Nothing worse than that, right? Being cut off, having somebody who's not paying attention, who doesn't look over their shoulder and just merges in front of you, and here you are in the hot seat having to make sure that there isn't a collision. And as frustrating that is, there's one thing that's worse than being cut off. It's being the guy that cuts somebody else off. You ever been in that situation? Maybe you're the distracted driver. Maybe something's going on, you're having a conversation. Maybe you're the one on the radio. Maybe you don't text and drive. Maybe you've got your phone out. And maybe you just get a little bit lazy and you know, you're just enjoying the ride and so you don't look over your shoulder and you think that you see everything for the way it is and you go to merge and all of a sudden you hear behind you that long, annoyed horn. And something cringes inside of you, and you throw up your hand. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was me. I cut you off. One of the things they teach you in driving school, one of the most important things when they're teaching you about distracted driving and all the rest of it, making sure that you know your surroundings, making sure that you're looking ahead, you know what other drivers are doing on the road, you're keeping your spacing well, you know, you see everything in front of you, you're checking in the mirrors. But even when you're doing all of that, you need to make sure you check your blind spot. Because all of us, whatever kind of vehicle we're driving, and some of us have bigger blind spots than others, depending on the kind of vehicle that we're driving, all of us have that spot that even if we check this mirror and that mirror and we're looking ahead, there's that one spot that if we don't turn around and look at, we're missing a potential danger, a potential collision, something that's going to cost us. And I'll tell you this, as you drive, and if you're driving long distance and you decide you're not going to check your blind spot, to be honest, you can get away with it for a while. You might get away with it for weeks or months or even years where you just, luckily, nothing is in that blind spot. But I'll tell you this, if you consistently fail to check your blind spot, eventually it's going to cost you. Eventually, you're going to hit someone or something. Eventually, it's going to cause a problem. And so we got to check our blind spots. We got to make sure that our perception of our situation on the road is accurate so that we're safe for us and for other people. And the same is true in the rest of our lives. Sometimes we think that we have a great perception of what's happening in life. We see everything in front of us. Sometimes we even might fall into the trap of thinking, I know everybody else's driving mistakes. The guy who cuts me off into my lane, the one who offends me in my life, the one who is driving dangerously and I can see that they are in danger of getting into an accident. I can see that person who's on their cell phone while they're driving. I can see that person who's distracted by their children. I can see this guy who's driving way too fast. And sometimes we can think that we know everybody else's blind spots, everybody else's dangers, and yet we can fail to check our own. We can fail to acknowledge the areas in our lives in which there might be danger, in which we might be able to get away with it for a little while, but in the long run, we know that we're going to pay a price if we don't start checking. And what we find easy is often to criticize other drivers, other people in our lives, and what they're doing. And what we don't find so easy is to admit that there's areas in our own lives that need attention before we hit something, before we get into an accident, before problems arise. These are areas that we don't readily see or address. Maybe we find them easy to ignore. Those are our blind spots, areas of dangers in our own lives that we don't often check, we don't often take stock of. And this is why it's so important that we do that, why it's so important that we're checking areas in our lives that have potential dangers. Because again, just like in driving, we might be able to get away with it for a while, but eventually it's going to cost us. What does that mean? I don't know this morning what your blind spot is. And over this series that we're starting today called Blind Spots, we're going to hit a number of them that are common in our society, in our world, for many of us. It could be for you that your financial situation is your blind spot, that you just don't really want to look at the numbers, or you want to be able to ignore the debt that is mounting up because all you have to do is pay minimum payments. Or maybe it's that you've become really, really good at spending, but you've never really learned how to give or to save, and you don't realize that in your life there's a blind spot there. If you don't do something about it, you may merge into a lane in which there's problems, in which you hit something. It could be in your relationships. Maybe it's with your family that you don't realize how little time you're spending with your spouse. And you think, I can get away with it. It's just a really busy season at work, and it's going to be fine. And so instead of looking over our shoulder and wondering, where's the danger here, we just kind of let it go unchecked. Maybe it's with your children, and there's some of those hard conversations or teaching moments that you need to take that are awkward, and you would rather not turn around and look over your shoulder and have to do those things. And maybe you think that just some of your relationships will just be okay as long as we keep our eyes forward and keep on cruising. And what you don't realize is that there's trouble, that there's potential for an accident if we don't look at those spaces that we don't necessarily see right away, those potential problems. Maybe, and I think this is a big one for a lot of us, because it's easy for us to leave it as a blind spot and not really check it and not acknowledge the problems that we have, our attitudes. You know, when we start to blame our attitudes on, well, I had a bad day, or I'm having a bad week, or this has been a tough year, and so instead of addressing it, instead of really checking out, why do I have this negative attitude? Why do I have this victim mentality? Why am I always living woe is me and allowing this negativity to create? We just leave it as a blind spot. We don't address it. And what happens is we realize that it fosters a problem, and because we don't want to check it, it goes unchecked, and it starts to affect all areas of our lives until the point where people around us see us as a negative person or a rude person or someone who's always focused on themselves, because we were never willing to turn around and say, hey, there's a problem back there. There's a blind spot that I need to address. And this morning, the place that I want to start in terms of our blind spots, knowing that we all have them in our lives, areas of potential problem that don't readily come to the surface, but that we need to check, I want to start with self-perception. Our own perception of me, of how I'm doing. Are we really looking at ourselves and acknowledging where there are struggles, where there are problems, where things aren't as they should be? Are we just allowing ourselves to keep our eyes forward and say, everything that I see here is fine, and so let's just continue driving, let's continue living the way that we're living now, instead of taking a hard look at ourselves and saying, where are the areas where I need to be on guard? I need to make sure that I'm aware of the problems and I'm addressing the problems in that area of my life. We're going to be in the book of Proverbs to start today. If you want to turn there, we're going to look at a few different ones. We'll start in Proverbs chapter 12, if you want to join me. And my hope is that you will be willing to look into your own life, your own perception of yourself, and to allow God to enter that space today and to maybe bring somebody else into that space and to refuse to continue to be blind to some of the problems or some of the problem areas in your life. So here we're going to go through three different Proverbs, three signs that your self-perception has a blind spot, three signs that you might stop and say, oh, I have a problem in the way that I'm viewing myself and the way that I'm living, and I need to check it. The first one is this. A sign that your self-perception has a blind spot, that there's a problem that you need to look over your shoulder and address. Number one, you don't listen to advice from others. Proverbs 12, verse 15, it says this, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice." The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. That means this, you are being foolish or stupid if you always think that you're right. If you think that the standard of how you should live and what you should do is based on your own judgment, then you are being foolish. Fools always think that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But people who are wise, they listen to advice of others. The fool knows no other standard than his own opinion. And however clearly and truly one may warn him that the way which he's chosen is the wrong way and leads to problems, he continues to stubbornly persist. A wise man, someone who's wise, a wise person, a wise woman, on the other hand, is someone who realizes that they are not so wise that they can't accept criticism, that they can't accept advice, that they can't have someone point out problems in their way of thinking or their judgment. They're not so wise in their own eyes that they are not willing to listen to well-meant counsel. Because however careful they may be regarding their own conduct, they don't regard their own judgment as infallible, as inerring. And so instead, they're willing to learn from someone else. It is foolish to think that your judgment is without error. Foolish to think that you see everything about yourself. Foolish to think that someone else can't give you good advice. And fools do not listen to advice from others. In other words, fools are headstrong, they're stubborn, they do whatever they like, while wise people stop and consider that what they are doing could be wrong. There could be a better way. They could be headed towards danger, and it would be prudent to check and make sure from the wisdom of someone else if there's a better way to go. And this offends our ego. This offends, that part of us that thinks, I've got it together. I don't need someone else to speak into us. It hurts us sometimes to hear criticism from other people. But if you never let other people point out a blind spot in your life, then you're bound to make mistakes. You're bound to get hurt in areas that you could have avoided if you were willing to look into that space of your life, if you're willing to look over your shoulder and acknowledge, that is a dangerous practice in my life. That is something that I should change. That's something that I should definitely address. And, you know, we avoid advice. Sometimes we even avoid the advice that we ourselves would tell other people. Has that ever happened to you? You know that the way that you're living is not the way that you would advise someone else to live. When you see them doing that, you would say, oh, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't go close to there. You shouldn't be acting this way. You shouldn't live that way. You should make sure that you avoid this. And yet in your own life, do you know what we sometimes trick ourselves into thinking? it won't happen to me. You ever thought that? I know for most people, they wouldn't be able to handle this because they'd go off the rails or they'd get hurt or they'd struggle with this, but I can handle that. A fool is unwilling to listen to advice. A fool thinks everything that they're doing is right, and they continue their course, refusing to listen to other advices. Here's the second thing. This comes from Proverbs chapter 21, verse 2. If you want to turn a few pages, the second sign that you have a self-perception blind spot is that you justify your actions with appearances. Proverbs 21, 2 says, "Every way of a man is right in his own eyes." We've heard that already, that this is a foolish way to live, thinking that your judgment is unerring, thinking that you always know what is right. But the Lord weighs the heart. A fool tries to justify his action by appearances, but the Lord, literally it says, Yahweh, is a weigher of hearts. And this challenges our idea that as long as we can make ourselves or our actions look good or justifiable, or as long as we can come up with an excuse, or as long as we can explain things away, then we're okay. And we spend a lot of time and energy doing that, don't we? Sometimes we spend a lot of time and energy worrying about a reputation rather than reality. Worrying about what other thinks. Worrying about whether or not we get caught. And sometimes we're worried more about getting caught for our sin or the things we know that we shouldn't do rather than actually grieving over the things that we actually do. So as long as nobody knows about my pornography addiction or sees my history, as long as nobody calls me out on my pride, as long as I have a good reason when people accuse me of something for doing what I did and mistreating somebody, as long as I can justify it in my mind, then I'm okay. And the writer here in Proverbs says, every way of a man is right in his own eyes. You can justify yourself based on outward appearances, based on your actions, based on the things that you can have excuses for and what you feel like you can justify to yourself or to other people. But Yahweh, God, is a weigher of hearts. He has the proper measure and scale to really evaluate where you're at. And it's not just based on your actions. It's not just based on what you can get caught for or what other people might get upset for you about or what you can hide versus what you can't hide. But instead, it says where Yahweh, where God really digs in and wants to know where we're at is he weighs our hearts, our motive, our will, that deep part of us that goes beyond just our actions. You see, it's very easy for us to be self-deceiving, to convince ourselves of why our way is right, why the way that we're living is okay, why this attitude is justifiable, why I can be mean to this person and all the rest of it. You can spend a lot of time justifying your actions, justifying your attitudes, making sure that other people don't catch you in certain sins, making sure that you look the part, making sure that no one can come after you and accuse you. And yet someone who's really wise realizes that what matters is in the heart. That is what Yahweh weighs. That is where he really measures us. And the subtle deceptions of the ways that we can go about fooling ourselves into thinking that we're doing okay are so easy for us to fall into, but they are they're foolish when we do that. God is a searcher of hearts. He knows who we are. He knows the depths of our souls and what is there. And there's no sense in us trying to deceive him or to deceive ourselves or even other people. You know, this is really tough for us. This is really difficult for us because it cuts us to the heart sometimes of who we are and the things that we really struggle with. For example, have you ever read through the Sermon on the Mount? Some of the most famous teaching of Jesus, you can find it in Matthew chapter 5 to Matthew 7, and where he takes a lot of the laws and the things that are in the Old Testament, this is how you're supposed to live, and he reinterprets them. And have you ever read some of those things and realized how often you read them and then say, yeah, but? You know, when you read that Jesus says, if somebody strikes you on the cheek, hits you, then turn the other cheek, implying that you're going to let them strike you again, that you are not going to fight, that you are not going to be violent. And you say, yeah, but. You know one of the most common things I hear about that passage? Yeah, but if it's self-defense, Isn't that exactly what Jesus is teaching? If somebody hits you first, don't hit them back in self-defense. Not even then. Yeah, but that's not reasonable. That's not going to work out well for me. Yeah, but Jesus says, I'm challenging you to be nonviolent. Yeah, but Jesus, that's so hard. And he's saying, yeah, it goes to your soul. Jesus says, you've heard it said that you shouldn't murder, but I say, don't even call your brother a fool. Don't even insult them. And you say, yeah, but that's so hard. I insult people all the time. It just comes out. I mean, that's just so difficult. Yeah, but. And over and over and over, Jesus takes the law, the rules of which you can justify yourself by and say, I'm following the rule. And he drives us to something so much deeper that is in our hearts, that is deep down, whether or not we are loving God with everything that we are, whether we're loving our neighbor, whether we're willing to sacrifice ourselves to a degree that seems so unreasonable to us that we say, yeah, but I could justify why I've done this. I could justify why I feel this way. So-and-so is treating me this way. Jesus, you can't expect me to what? Love my enemy? Yeah, but my enemy drives me nuts. They come after me. Jesus, you can't really mean that. And we spend so much time trying to justify ourselves, and then we come back to this place where we realize that God is aware of the heart. That sometimes, even when we're following the rules, he knows that our heart isn't in it. He knows that we're not in the right place. And Proverbs is saying that's a blind spot, is when all you think you need to do is make sure that your outward appearance is okay, because God's going to weigh your heart. Here's an example that Jesus uses. In Luke chapter 16, Jesus is teaching about money, and he teaches this parable. It's rather complicated, that essentially he's saying you should use your money, which is temporal here in this earth, to make friends for yourself or to invest in eternal things, things that will last forever. So don't be greedy. Make sure that you're giving to the purposes of God, those kind of things. And then the religious leaders come at him, and they ridicule him for that. They say, that's ridiculous that you would say that. And Jesus responds this way. He says, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God. And then Jesus starts teaching this amazing section about how God's kingdom is bursting in, that a new way of living, a new way of acting is being inaugurated. Jesus is starting it. And the way he challenges them is, on the one hand, you have the religious bigwigs who, they would have been meticulous in bringing offerings to the temple, in making sure that they're bringing their percentage to God. And Jesus challenges and says, you justify yourself, and you can come and say, I give my 10%. But God is judging on the heart level. He wants to know that you're bringing yourself, you're bringing your devotion, you're bringing your love. It's not just following the rules. God weighs something deeper. But then he also challenges those of us who would go the other way and say, well, I don't want to be legalistic, so I'm not going to bring any money to God. And what Jesus does when he attacks some of the people who are so law-abiding is not give them a standard that's less than a law, but more. The choice here, the answer here is not to say, well, then I don't have to bring money. Jesus is saying, I want you to bring your money and yourself, all of you, to God. Because I'm going to weigh your heart. And where your heart is, that's where your treasure is going to be. And that's where your action is going to be. And that's how you're going to live it out. Foolish people try and justify our actions. We try and make sure that everything's right in our own eyes or the eyes of people around us. But God is aware of our hearts. He drives us deeper to a love ethic where we come to him with all that we are. Finally, here's the third thing. Proverbs 26, chapter 12, about our own perception, a blind spot that we might have in our own perception. Here's how you know if you're really not investigating those areas in your life that need to be addressed. Your life isn't changing. Your spiritual life is not vibrant and growing. You've become stagnant. You're staying where you are. Proverbs 26:12 says, do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than him. If you are wise in your own eyes, if you will continue stubbornly doing the things that you're doing, if you refuse other people speaking into your life and giving you advice, if you don't look at where your heart is and address your heart issues, if you're going to continue in that stubborn kind of way, there's more hope for a fool than for you, because you will be stuck in this mindset thinking that you can accomplish everything. Your way is right. You will get where you need to go in life if you just keep doing what you're doing. In Proverbs, it says there's more hope for a fool, someone who has no wisdom, than for someone who thinks their wisdom is unerring and who will continue in it. Do you know what the confirmation bias is? It's this thing that they've studied that says that we all have a tendency when receiving new information to process it in a way that fits our pre-existing narrative about a situation or a problem. So in other words, if you're convinced of something and you get new information, we all have in us this bias that says, I'm going to try and make sure that that information fits with what I already believe, how I'm already living. So when you go to your absolute favorite restaurant, you bring some friends and you say, this is the best restaurant. The service is good. The food is good. The atmosphere is amazing. You're going to love this. And you go to your restaurant and all of a sudden something goes wrong. Maybe the service is a little slow that night. Maybe the food is a little bit off. You take that information and you find a way to make it fit with what you already believe. Oh, this is just an off night. Oh, this is the exception to the rule. Oh, this never happens. Oh, their cook must be sick. And we justify it. Whereas the other way, if you go into a restaurant that you've had a horrible experience and you know that it's just awful and the food's no good and its service is lousy, then when you go there and that's what you expect, all the information you take in, you use it to confirm the conclusions that you've already brought. And if it happens that the food turns out good, you say, it's a fluke. It's a confirmation bias. And we all do it in our own lives. We have a certain amount of comfort level with how we're living and what we should be doing. And we're comfortable with it. And when we get new information, we like that information we find a way for it to confirm what's already happening, because that means we don't have to change anything. We don't have to do something different. We don't have to leave our comfort zone. We don't have to address problems in our lives. Some of us do this when we hear a sermon. Right? Sometimes the things that you people take out of my sermons are no, I'm just kidding. You know, you look for that one little nugget in a sermon or in a biblical text that makes you feel good about what you are and confirms that everything is okay, instead of allowing God's word to challenge you deep into your heart and to say, yeah, that's something I got to work on. That's something that I have to change. That's a blind spot in my life that if I don't address, one day I'm going to shift lanes and I'm going to hit something and it's going to cost me. Warren Buffett says this about the confirmation bias. He says, what the human being is best at doing is interpreting all new information so that their prior conclusions remain intact. We just want the status quo. We don't want to have to be changed. We don't want our actions to be called into question. We want to be comfortable. We don't want to look over our shoulder because we might find something there that is a danger and that needs to be addressed. So here's my challenge to you this morning. I want you to think for a few minutes, maybe as we conclude our service, maybe this afternoon or this week, are there areas of your life, is there a spot in your life where you acknowledge that's a blind spot, that's one that I haven't turned over my shoulder to look at and to address? And I'll tell you this, the area of your life that you least want to open up to that kind of investigation is the one that you need it most. Right? The area of your life where you don't want to take advice, where you don't want to tell somebody about where you're struggling, where you're embarrassed that you've done this, where you don't want to confess this kind of action, the area that you least want to open up to investigation, it's the one that you most need to invite somebody else into. And what I'm going to ask you to do is that over the next week or so, that you would find someone that you can bring into that space and talk to on a heart level. Maybe it's somebody from a small group that you've been part of. Maybe it's a close friend that you can say, I need advice because I know that this is a blind spot. I've been justifying how I look at myself, but I acknowledge there's something that I need to change. And I need someone else to speak into my life. And I'll tell you, the area right now that's come into your mind that you say, but I don't want to talk to anybody about that, and I don't want to have to change that attitude, and I don't want to have to deal with that problem, that's the one that you need most to deal with. Because if gone unchecked, you might be able to get away with it for a while, but eventually it's going to cost you. Eventually you're going to hit something. But if you look over your shoulder now, there's a chance that you can deal with it before that happens. That's the area you most need to address. Now, you get to this point. We can't stop here. This point is a little bit daunting. It's kind of convicting. It's scary for us to think about. Opening up those vulnerable areas of our lives that need changing, and to really dealing with them, to really looking danger in the face and acknowledging it. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 9. This is so, so important, because Christianity is not about just saying, hey, here's some things that you need to fix on your own, and so go at it and be challenged. And this is why it's so important that this morning I hope you will feel willing to look into your life and into the blind spots of your own perception of yourself, your own sin, your own actions. Matthew chapter 9, verse 9. Jesus had just healed someone, and there are people who are getting upset at him because he's doing things all the wrong way. And as Jesus, this is Matthew chapter 9, verse 9, as Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, a hated person, a traitor in that culture, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose and followed him. And as Jesus reclined at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard it, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. For I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." Do you know the pattern of people who approach Jesus? He offers everybody to follow him. But for those who feel like they've got things covered, for those who feel like they can go and work themselves into making sure that they've done things right, Jesus gives them the offer, and when they refuse it, and when they go out and say, "I can do this, I can do it on my own," Jesus inevitably, eventually, he lets them go. He lets them try. There are many people who come to Jesus and ask, "What should I do?" and go away sad, go away convicted. And instead, Jesus focuses attention on people who know that they need his grace. Because that's the kind of person that he can mold, the kind of person that he can change. There is more hope for a fool than for the one who thinks they can do it all on their own, for the one who thinks that they can make things better by themselves. And the good news of Jesus, the gospel message, just blows up that need for us to hide our inadequacies, the need for us to hide the blind spots and shove them back and say, "I'm not going to look at them or acknowledge them or talk to anybody about them because I'm too embarrassed." C.S. Lewis puts it this way. He says, "The gospel means we can stop lying to ourselves. The sweet sound of amazing grace saves us from the necessity of self-deception. It keeps us from denying that though Christ was victorious, the battle with lust, greed, and pride still rages within us. As a sinner who has been redeemed, I can acknowledge that I am often unloving, irritable, angry, and resentful with those closest to me. When I go to church, I can leave my white hat at home and admit I have failed. God not only loves me as I am, but also knows me as I am. Because of this, I don't need to apply spiritual cosmetics to make myself presentable to him. I can accept ownership and powerlessness and neediness." That thing that we have so much difficulty doing, just saying, "I am in the wrong, I am struggling, I am hurting, I am sick," is exactly what gives us access to God's grace. And Jesus says, "I didn't come for the people who think that they're well and righteous and have it all together. They can try and try and try. I've come for the people who realize that they're sick and needy, because that's the kind of person that I can mold and change." And the gospel allows us to put down all our self-righteousness and all our self-deceptions and all that's in us that tries to justify ourselves and say, "I'm doing pretty good," and come to him and say, "I'm sick." But don't you love that the God of the universe says, "This is who I am. I'm a physician that have come for sick people. I am your solution. I am the one that can make you well. Don't you love that about God? He's not the God that come and said, now live up to all of my rules. Good luck achieving. He's the one that come and said, you're sick. Do you know that you're sick and you need a doctor? I am the doctor. I've got your medicine. I've got the cure. I will give it to you. Don't you just love that about God? If you're willing to look in your blind spots, that's a problem. Yeah, I struggle with that. Yeah, I probably got to change the way that I live. And Jesus shows up and said, you're exactly the kind of person I've come for. You know, I had to go to the dentist this week. I hate going to the dentist. When I was a kid, teenager, I used to avoid going to the dentist as much as I could. Even when you get a little bit of a pain and you think you might have a cavity, you ever done that? You try and pretend like it's not there for as long as possible. Because you know that when you go to the dentist, they're not just going to go to that one tooth and quickly fix it and then send you out. They're going to start looking at all your teeth. They're going to start opening up your whole mouth. They're going to have to drill and scrape, and it's going to be kind of painful. But when you get a little bit older, you realize that if you are willing to go to the dentist on a regular basis, that your teeth are going to be in much better shape. And that the problem really is not the dentist at all. It's all the sugar that you eat, and it's when you forget to floss, and it's the problems that you have keeping up your teeth. And so you go, and you let them clean, and you let them drill, and you let them put in fillings if need be. And you know that there's a chance that one time you're going to go in there and they're going to tell you that you've got to pull your wisdom teeth, and you really don't want that day to come, but you know that is better than the alternative. Listen to this. When it comes to our own sin, when it comes to our own struggles, if we are more opposed to the doctor than the disease, then we're never going to get well. I'll say that again. If we're more opposed to the doctor than the disease, then we're never going to get well. If we're too afraid of the pain of really interacting with the sin in our lives, and we never let the doctor do his work, we're never going to get well. But here's the really good news. If you're willing to face those things head on, to acknowledge that you're sick, to acknowledge that there's areas in your life that need to be dealt with, then Jesus steps in and he says, I've come for you and I'm your doctor and I want to help make you well. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up now. And as they do, and as we sing our last song, I want to invite you to think about that area of your life that, as I've been talking this morning, has come to your mind. The one that you know you would rather not address, that you would rather not look at, that you would rather not admit, the one that you don't want to tell anybody about, the one area of your life that you don't want an advisor, that you don't want someone to give you advice and to say, this is where you need to grow, this is a problem in your life. The one area that you don't even really want God to invade because you know it might be uncomfortable, because you know that he is going to want to change you. And to ask yourself, are you more opposed to the doctor or the disease? And if you're willing to offer that up to God in confession, and if you're willing to go and find someone that you can invite into your life, into that conversation, and to ask them for accountability, to ask them to speak into your life, and to allow God to step into that blind spot and help you heal. As we sing this last song, would you take that time to meditate and offer those things up to God?